5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Sitting there working out the math. Does she take her dowry and go back? How bad was the affair? Like some god is like, was it just hand stuff or was there something else going on?
How big of a deal? Over the clothes.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is
More Like Ancient Aliens.
Excellent.
Excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
That I think that brings the gravitas that is going to be littered throughout
pageantry.
This episode. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No notes. Thank you, Matt.
Yes.
No notes. This is More Like Ancient Aliens. A podcast that was once about the hit pseudo-history channel show Ancient Aliens, and is now about how UFOs and aliens are represented in popular culture. I am Toby Ball, who also represented aliens in popular culture through my podcast, Strange Arrivals.
And I am Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who's interested in genius things and in figuring out what the hell the Akashic Record really is.
I am very happy to introduce one of the three hosts of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, an executive producer on everything I have ever done for iHeart, including Strange Arrivals, one of the nice guys in podcasting, Matt Frederick.
Oh, nice guys in podcasting?
Yeah, I just put you in there.
That's the sweetest thing anyone has ever said to me, Toby. Thank you very much, dude.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Can I just say, I'm so happy to be here and excited to be here, and I don't know why when you talk about Strange Arrivals, you don't immediately say and television series.
No, movie.
Movie? Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
Have you heard the updates on this?
No.
They're in the development phase, but it's going to be Coleman Domingo and Demi Moore are going to play Betty and Barney Hill.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's like, what the heck, man?
I know.
Yeah, Toby sleeps on that information.
Yeah. When the money doesn't come through, I don't want to have to come out and be like, well, actually.
Oh, dang.
But Demi certainly talks about it all the time. So I'm assuming it's going to happen.
I would just say, as somebody like you guys have been podcasting for a long time, been in this game. I've been doing it since about 2008. That is astonishing to have something you created get enough interest to get names like that involved and any studio anywhere excited about your project. So I would clap very hard, but it would blow out the microphone.
I've got my fingers crossed that this all gets over the finish line. It's been a cool process so far. I've learned quite a bit. Hopefully more to come.
Yes, if you want to hear Toby avoid the question of his great success selling a podcast and turning it into a future hit movie, you too can become a subscriber to More Like Ancient Aliens by going over to grabbagcollab.com. Become a member of the More Like Ancient Aliens family. You will hear us talking to Matt about cheery topics like what's going to happen with AI and social media and whether Jesse the Body Ventura will become president someday. You can also tune into other great grab bag shows. And of course, always go on, rate, review, subscribe. Send Toby a note that says that you too support him bragging on himself a little more because Toby's very aw shucks about it all. That's my public service announcement. Toby, take it away.
Okay. We talked a couple episodes ago about the pivot we're making. This does not mean we are completely abandoning Ancient Aliens. We are actually doing an Ancient Aliens episode today. We are going to kind of approach them a little differently, and rather than go beat by beat through the entire episode, because as you've noticed, there's only so much you can say about the Book of Enoch. We're going to do it sort of more thematically. We're going to give it a shot. Matt is a veteran podcaster. He's going to be able to help us roll with this. So let's see what's going to happen. I, for one, am very interested. Today we're looking at Season 9, Episode 4, The Genius Factor. It originally aired on November 21st, 2014. The World Health Organization on this date reported that an outbreak of bubonic plague in Madagascar had killed 40 people. Also, the House of Representatives sued President Barack Obama over some executive actions he had taken regarding the Affordable Care Act. That did not go so well for them. And the Affordable Care Act is still sort of around, although it's much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we covering this episode? It's looking at something that's kind of at the very heart of ancient astronaut theory, which is that human ingenuity is the result of contact with extraterrestrials. It's also a rare chance to look at modern Westerners having their sort of genius ascribed to extraterrestrials, which feels a little less ethnocentric. The thesis, geniuses, how do they do it? It must have something to do with ETs or an energy presence containing all of human knowledge, or possibly both.
But could there really be an unseen force behind these incredible minds, a force with extraterrestrial origins?
Yeah, mind blown. The first sort of section is trying to get at what really is genius. The story starts off with this guy, Jason Paget, who was mugged and knocked unconscious, went into a coma, had traumatic brain injury, but woke up. He has acquired synesthesia and suddenly can see mathematical patterns and things, you know, particularly fractals.
Mm-hmm.
He would see the Pythagorean theorem in objects that most of us don't notice or don't ever see those things.
Almost like he can see the Matrix. Just put that
yes.
out there.
Yeah. It's suddenly become visible to him.
It's incredible.
We also get Derek Amato.
Derek Amato hit his head in a pool and it transformed him into a talented pianist.
Although, again, some of these claims, as we'll get to later, like a lot of ancient alien claims, when you get a little more detail, they're not quite as stark as what they're telling you.
Matt, I don't know. Are you very familiar with the genre of television that is ancient aliens? I assume you probably know your way around it pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Back when there was really just cable channels and before we all jumped away from that, the History Channel and Ancient Aliens were often on my television because I really did like the exploration of a lot of these concepts. I like the fact that it's a show that kind of lets us at least think about them. But some of the speakers, man, when they give you that definitive, oh, this is what it is, this is how it is, it always turned me off a little bit, much more so now that I've gotten older, a little wiser. But I would still say there's a soft spot in my heart for this show, I think. There's something that it triggers in my mind.
Yeah, this one, I have to admit, Toby, you're not going to like this. I really like this episode. we'll get into it more.
You're allowed to enjoy it.
Yeah, but I mean, I was also like, it's not very often that I find myself being like, Wilcock, he's got a point, or Childress. I mean, so I was like, God damn it, I think this is the one. Because I thought this one was going to be the most batshit, but I was like, well, this is really sort of scratching an itch. It didn't disappoint in that, you know, it has the big cold open with Einstein and these big questions of like, where does consciousness come from and all that, and the implication that it's going to somehow connect to aliens. Then it opens with guy in Tacoma, Washington, comes out of karaoke bar and gets mugged.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
As he walks out of a karaoke bar, 31-year-old Jason Paget is brutally mugged by two men and knocked unconscious.
And then immediately I'm like, are they going to try and say aliens mug this guy? Because I am ready for that. But luckily they did not. I was feeling like it could go anywhere at this point. If you're starting with karaoke mugging, here we go. They went for it, but not in the way I expected.
One of the other people that it mentions here is a guy named Daniel Tammet, and they barely touch on him. Are you guys familiar with that dude?
No.
Mm-mm.
A fabulous book called Born on a Blue Day. It's written by him. It's his story. He's on the spectrum and he, you know, experienced epileptic seizures, but he can see numbers as shapes. So like huge numbers, he sees them as shapes and then he puts those shapes together, sees how they connect and it makes a bigger shape. And then he can just tell you what that number is and solve equations in that way and make incredible calculations. But through synesthesia and in some neural connections, in some way that science doesn't fully understand how or why he can do it, he has this superpower. I love how they open with that because it touches on consciousness is one of those problems where science can get to a certain point where we can say, it appears that this is what's happening, right? When these neural pathways are activated, when this side of the brain is going through the corpus callosum and it goes over here, we see that that is a meditative state. But there's still a lot of questions about what consciousness is, where it actually originates within those processes, right? And if it is just up in here, and how is that connected to your gut microbiome? Which there's weird science coming out about that. Weird
yeah.
Studies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Toby, as our resident grump, did you were you moved and touched by the existential possibilities?
Well, I wish they had Matt's little explanation about this guy, because I think that gets towards the idea behind genius, right? What makes genius? When the brain heals itself, does it give access to genius stuff that maybe most people have in their brains? Is that a process sort of enabled through this traumatic brain injury? How do you actually define what a genius is? I certainly have friends who are like, oh, this person's a genius, that person's a genius. I'm like, well, if there's that many people who are geniuses, it doesn't really seem like it's that cool anymore. Real geniuses seem to me like they're sort of redefining things. It's not just that guy can play guitar faster than anybody, so he's a genius. It's more like, does that guy pick up a guitar and do stuff that nobody's ever done before or really contemplated before? Is that guy a genius? I'm using guitars because it's like the easiest.
It's the true sign of genius.
Kind of metaphor. But
Einstein, incredible axe man.
But when you were talking about that thing with the like numbers and stuff, like that to me seems like it's different, right? He's not doing the same stuff other people are doing, just doing it better. He's got a different approach to it innately that works.
It certainly seems superhuman. I actually really like guitar as an example there. Do you guys play music?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
Trombone, once upon a time, many years ago. Nobody called me a genius.
Well, you know, the language of music really does, I think, rewire your brain in some really interesting ways. Just being able to look at a sheet, right? And then go, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can translate that into sound. There's something about the improvisation that can occur. And, you know, I want to take it to jazz because I'm not a jazz man. Okay, guys. But I've got a drum kit behind me. I'm a drummer, lifelong drummer. I love to have that creative moment where we don't know what we're going to do, but somebody is going to get a little inspired to do something. And then everybody else uses that as inspiration. They use the word inspire a lot in this episode. And when I think about a creative genius, like an artist who has a bunch of different thoughts, then combines them into one thing. That's how I've always thought about genius. For some reason, it's always been art for me. And maybe that's because I was a liberal arts kid. I didn't understand the genius of things like mathematics and some of the hard sciences and getting into things like, good Lord, sending rockets outside of this planet's atmosphere. And what are the calculations you need to do that? I always saw it as in somebody who can create something new.
There was a comic that came out a number of years ago by Scott McCloud called Understanding Comics. Do you remember this? It was
I don't know this.
It was a graphic novel, and he basically goes through the history of comics and then the way that we read them, like why they work, the idea that how the brain processes these static images to make a narrative out of them. But one of the things he talks about that always sticks with me is there's sort of one kind of artist that is absolutely the best at doing this thing. Like they can render these images the most beautifully. They are the ultimate practitioners of this art as we understand it, whether that's literature or music or painting or whatever it is. And then there's these other ones that break that paradigm, right? Like they come up with something that's so unusual, but it takes that particular form in a totally different direction. And like both of those are valid, and you can sort of always see practitioners of each one working at any given time, you know, and like the person who's breaking the paradigm, it may be so broken that it doesn't become the new standard. So like, it's just about this experimentation. Whereas you need the ones who are sort of upholding traditions and refining them and showing like, this is the ultimate expression of this particular kind of thing. Mm. You know, you can watch any movie by anybody or whatever and sort of categorize, is this more a practitioner who's perfecting this art at this moment in time, or are they doing something so different that it could potentially steer in a new direction or just break the model altogether? Understanding Comics, Scott McCloud, check it out.
I just wrote it down. Seriously, I'm definitely getting that.
It's great.
When I was in college, so like in the late 80s, I can't remember which, it was on one of the late night shows, but there were two saxophonists, and one of them was like a pretty traditional jazz saxophonist, and the other was, for some reason, I think it's Ornette Coleman, but it's probably just not, because I don't even, that's just a name that I associate with this. But anyway, they came up and they went to jam on this song, right? And the one guy plays like this very clean do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. The second guy comes on and he's just making these like crazy noises. Sounds like airplanes. It was just such a different approach. And I was sitting with a friend of mine who was a musician, and he's like, that guy is different than that guy. He was like, that's the guy who is the genius. That's a guy who's just really good at his craft. Mm-hmm. He's like using the instrument in ways that other people just don't. It's so much easier to talk about this stuff as far as the arts go, because mm-hmm. you can listen or you can look. And you don't need all this background information. Whereas with math, it's just like, oh, he knows infinite sets. It's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'll just assume that you're right and that this guy has got it down, but there's no way I can relate to it. And I think that's the weird thing about Einstein. He was able to be talking at the highest levels of physics, but in a way that was simple enough that you felt like you could kind of grasp what mm-hmm. he was talking about. That seems like a very special kind of genius, is to be able to take these just mind-blowing concepts, but he just makes them so simple and so sort of elegant that you're like, I get it. Everybody's going through space-time at the speed of light, and your experience of it's different based on this, that, the other thing. But we'll talk about that. The math guy they bring up a little bit later, the guy who was not formally trained in India and came up with all these theories.
He wasn't a janitor somewhere in Boston?
I know. Yeah, oh, no? Exactly. It's like the total goodwill hunting. I just checked out a couple different sort of theories of genius. One, which it seems like it's like basically it seems to describe Steve Jobs, which is essentially that that geniuses tend to have these like really strong insights into their field and then have the confidence of their insight that they'll see it out to its fruition. I guess a lot of people do that and it sucks, and those people are not geniuses. But in the case where they do kind of work out, that's where you find a genius. Another one was, if this one particular person hadn't come up with it, it's not clear that it would have been come up with, or at least anytime soon. It was just sort of the singular insight. A combination of the first and the second seemed to make sense to me. Van Gogh, for instance, he starts painting in this different way and he fucking sticks with it, even though he's becoming poor and cutting off his ear. He stays true to this vision, which in the end bears out as genius.
Well, you're in Spain, Toby, so at some point you'll probably go to the Picasso Museum. It shows his earliest works and then how that evolved into the style that we know of as Picasso, Cubism and all the rest. And you see from a young age that he was such a precise craftsman. He could do these figurative works that were beautiful. You just couldn't believe that a child was able to draw this well. It was somebody who understood the way the musculature of the body worked and light and shadow. The museum sort of shows how he begins to leave that stuff behind. Like, he figures it out. What's the next thing? What's more fundamental about the form than what I can depict here by having, you know, a nude model looking the way I see them and the way most people see them? And then you get into this like multidimensional stuff and the kind of weird planes of cubism, the idea that like, what if I could see the front and back of a person at the same time? So, you know, he's getting into asking some of these same questions about like how you perceive reality and how do I distort that? And what does it show me if I begin to break these rules? And then obviously like inventing whole new traditions that shaped art after that. Turned into modern art.
That's a really cool example. Let's just add some dimensions to, or let's add time as a concept inside this image. Adding complexity or even the amount of information that you can store into a smaller thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. There's something to that. Maybe what somebody like, you know, one of these artists like a Picasso is actually accessing is not just inside their head.
Mm-hmm.
That's what got me. That's what got me. I was
oh,
like,
no.
I buy that. I buy it. I'm sorry.
The Akashic Record, baby.
I do. I know.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Is there a repository of knowledge outside of ourselves that we can access? Good question. This is introduced by David Childress, who wonders, are we really that smart that we can come up with this genius stuff?
We wonder if we really have the neurological brain power to really be such geniuses and think of all of these amazing inventions.
My answer is, yeah, some of us are, I guess. I'm not including myself in the us, but... And he then says, in quotes, some scientists
have speculated that what these geniuses are doing is tapping into ideas that are coming from outside of them.
Which inevitably leads to, how did ancient geniuses describe their inspiration? Which brings us up to one of Brandon's favorites, Hammurabi.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He says he channeled God to come up with the code of laws. And my favorite part of this entire episode is when Jonathan Young, who we've interviewed, friend of the show, helpfully pointed out that
rather famous punishment, an eye for an eye, which has been modified over the years, but...
Yeah, it has been modified a little bit, I guess.
Guys, I gotta say, this concept of a ruler, a king, like Hammurabi is ruler when he gets divinely inspired, correct?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
He's not just a child when he purports to have this. Well, on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, many a times we have discussed, I don't want to insult anybody for their religious beliefs, right? Spiritual religious beliefs are one thing, and then just how I'm talking about them or thinking about them. It's from an academic standpoint or from a standpoint of a scientist that doesn't believe, right? I'm not a believer, so I talk about it differently. Don't want to insult you if you're listening to this. We've talked about some guys who say things like they found a bunch of golden plates, and then those golden plates were divinely inspired, and then, but I can't find them anymore, and they're gone, but God definitely said all these things. Or, you know, somebody goes up onto a mountain, says, fire, talk to me, and I got a bunch of these ideas, and I chiseled them down for you. And this is God. Definitely God said this. Like, for sure, God said this. I'm very skeptical of those moments, as in when a Hammurabi, allegedly he goes into a trance, and then God speaks literally in a different voice through him, and now he's telling you all of these things about divorce, what needs to happen. No, seriously.
Yeah.
I've read through the entire Code of Hammurabi here, and my feeling, guys, is that the king wanted to get a divorce, but he didn't want to initiate it. He wanted God to be the one that gives him the go-ahead, so he's not the bad guy.
Worked for Henry VIII, too.
Henry VIII? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, Joseph Smith gave it a shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was just in 1780 BC.
Oh, oldie but goodie.
Is divorce the great driver of religious revolution? Is that what we're realizing? It's just like somebody wanted to get some strange and they're like, let me redefine what the universe really is and who's running things.
Did you read what it says in here? I'm going to read one. This is from the Code of Hammurabi. This is a direct quote here. If a woman wishes to divorce her husband and refuses him sexual rights, an inquiry shall be held. If she has not committed adultery, but her husband has, she may take her dowry and return to her father's house. If she has committed adultery, then she shall be executed by being thrown into the water. If a free man's wife wishes to divorce him, the man may divorce her and give her no settlement. If the man does not wish to divorce her, he may marry another woman and keep his first wife as his house slave.
Sure.
That's a nice option.
First of all, you have to imagine that there's some larger spirit, some larger consciousness out there that is really involved in the marriages and divorces on this plane.
It is a good point. It's like,
if a man does something wrong, it's like, hey, bad boy. But if the woman does something wrong, immediately executed.
Yeah, drown her.
Sure. Yeah. Drown the witch, stone her. I mean, the more disturbing thing is like, that's still the rules in some places in the world. So
is it Wilcock who says Hammurabi's laws are still have influence? So they must have been like really advanced for their time. Come on, man.
There is some really progressive stuff in there. If someone who is in debt has their crop destroyed by a natural disaster, then that person will owe no interest for that year to a creditor. There's even stuff in there about an ox. The city is not responsible if you get gored by somebody's ox. If a free person's ox happens to gore another free person on the street so that the person dies, there is no cause of action. But if the free person's ox is a habitual gorer, then the free person has been officially notified, yet does not cover the horns of the ox or tie it up. Then the ox gores another free person so that the person dies. The owner of the ox shall pay 1/4 kilogram of silver to the relatives of the deceased.
He must have just like day in and day out, which is getting people come up and being like, what should I do about this? What should I do about this? This I got gored by this guy's bull. He's finally like, fuck it. I'm just going to like lay out some rules. It's just going to be all there. We're not going to have to negotiate this stuff. And I'm just going to say God told me, so nobody will argue about it.
Is Habitual Gorer the best band name for
Habitual
two guys playing saxophone, for example? Just some serious experimental sax.
This guy,
Habitual Gore.
This guy won't do anything about his habitual goring ox.
Yeah. God, so annoying.
You know, the show, so much of what I like about it is that it's asking these really fundamental questions about consciousness and where artistic ideas, legal ideas, scientific ideas, mathematical ideas come from. As happens so often with Ancient Aliens, you're like, I'm with you. And then, of course, they have to take it to, and what if there's some extraterrestrial somewhere who are plugging this in for a purpose, right?
Yes.
There's a program that they're sending us along, and that's why like these ideas show up at this particular time. And that's the point at which you're like, well, you don't really need that, right? Like Toby said, you have a guy who's sitting there and day in, day out, people are like, my ox, my wife, all of this stuff. And then you go, well, I better write some of this down and figure these things out. Like, you don't need some sort of extraterrestrial intelligence to answer that question. It's like, that's just a person who's inventing bureaucracy, basically. That's not magic.
In a place that's sophisticated enough where people are charging interest on loans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not coming from like Stone Age stuff. It's like a functioning society. And well, we should probably have some rules about how things go. So, you know, everybody gets treated fairly, or at least fairly according to me or God.
Years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Matt Frederick.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Matt, you're the host of a very popular podcast that addresses some, possibly all the things that we cover here on More Like Ancient Aliens at some point or another. How did you get into podcasting? Where did you come from?
I was a film and video student in college. I applied randomly for an internship at a website called How Stuff Works back in 2006 and got that internship, thankfully, along with several other people I ended up meeting, including Ben Bolin, one of the other co-hosts of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. He and I co-created a video series called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know back in 2008. And from that moment on, we weren't really podcasters, but we were on iTunes Video on the charts for a long time in the late aughts. But we really became podcasters in 2013.
Because that was earlier days for podcasting. Now, obviously, there is quite a few species of podcasts out there. How did y'all settle on that idea initially? What was the thing that made you feel like this is a direction we want to go with this?
Oh, gosh. He and I were both massive fans of these Time Life books, like about unsolved mysteries, cold cases throughout history. We were just really interested in the questions that remained out there where we didn't have a solid answer. We felt like humanity didn't really have a solid answer. And we happened to be working for a website that was all about, you know, breaking things down from an engineering perspective. How Stuff Works used to cover everything, but it was always from a scientific perspective. We thought, well, what if we take a scientific perspective and critical thinking and we apply it to a big part of what the internet was doing, at least on social media around that time? There were conspiracy theories, things like Above Top Secret and a bunch of these other websites back in the day where you'd have people posting wild stuff. We thought, well, can we break this down, have a conversation about it, teach people in a way without making anybody feel dumb for whatever it is they believe? And maybe people who are on, you know, over here might come a little closer to the center. People on the other side might realize, oh, well, maybe there is something there, but it's probably not X.
Mm-hmm. I'm friends with Charles Chuck Bryant.
Yes.
Stuff You Should Know. And we've had many conversations over the years because he, like you, nicest guy in the world, and was very surprised when he and Josh started the podcast. Like they did, you know, they're like, podcasting is this thing. And then evolved and became, you know, this phenomenon. And so they were sort of in the middle of this and thinking about all of a sudden, what responsibility do we have toward this growing audience?
Yes.
As your audience gets bigger, as, you know, the field of podcasting evolves, like how do you pivot and all those things? It's sort of these two polarities that you guys are also working on. And on top of that, I mean, theirs is, you know, just like how shoes work, among other things. Like they have some basic things that are not necessarily as controversial, but you have a show in which you're also having to pivot with the evolution of politics as, for example, certain political parties become more conspiratorial.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about like, are we now political more than we wanted to be? I'm curious about, yeah, how did your thinking about what responsibilities you have, did that evolve or did you just maintain throughout?
In the beginning, I wasn't as concerned about like, how does this come off? We wanted to be as scientific as we can, keep that critical thinking thing. That was always the goal. But I didn't feel a weight to it until we saw some of the response and the viewership of some of those first videos. We were astounded. We didn't understand why people were so interested in fluoridation of water and the potential conspiracy there. Once we saw how many eyes were actually on the stuff, it certainly changed it for me. I began citing sources and putting little terms in the videos, even in the podcast. We're saying where you can find out more as somebody who's engaging with us. So it's not just a bunch of dudes telling you how things are.
The kinds of topics you've been interested in exploring, has that evolved?
Since we started it, I've been married, I've had a son, I've been divorced. I've gone through a lot of life changes, and I was very much interested in pretty intense political stuff there for a while. That's all I wanted to talk about. That was the most important thing. Like, how do we break free from whatever political enemy that I saw? I've become much more hardened to that stuff and much more disillusioned to a lot of that, just about good guys and bad guys. I've gotten way more weird about it, guys. I'm actually way more into aliens now. I'm way more into like the kind of out there stuff because it feels safer and happier than a lot of the reality of current events, I would say, that conspiracies are often tied to.
It pushed you into the arms of ancient astronaut theory.
Is it safe?
Yeah. Just don't loan Eric Von Däniken any money, and then you'll be just fine. I mean, you're really fine now because he's no longer with us, as far as we know. But yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I do vow one day to hang out with Giorgio. I want to hang out with Giorgio one day.
Yeah. I think he'd be a good hang. Toby and I talk about, he just seems like such a nice, earnest guy. He's probably he's probably really fun to have some ceviche with or something.
Oh, dude.
Why ceviche? I don't know.
Matt, that's because it's delicious.
It's delicious. What more do you need to know?
Now we're getting to the crux of the episode, which is the concept of the collective unconscious and the Akashic record.
Ugh.
My sense of the collective unconscious, it's something that every person has that is sort of the product of the human past that gets passed down to you genetically, but you have inside you. Whereas the Akashic Record is like some sort of ethereal force, which has all the collective information of humanity or perhaps even the universe. That is something that you can, that anybody can access through certain methods. They talk about Steve Jobs and how his Buddhist meditation inspired him. He's also said that the most important thing for him was taking LSD. I imagine there are people who think LSD helps you hook up with the Akashic Record, but I don't know much about it.
I'm a big Jung guy, Carl Jung. So the collective unconscious, I always thought was very cool. This idea that somehow these stories recur throughout history. And obviously that's the secret story of all of the ancient alien stuff, is like, why are all these particular myths seeming so similar? They say, well, there's this external force, these aliens that are shaping it across time and space. And then Carl Jung would say, there's some fundamental intelligence or some fundamental thing that unites us all. And that gets into things like synchronicities and a lot of this stuff. Some of it is psychology and the way just our minds work. And some of it is way more mystical. I like all that stuff and subscribe to certainly some of it. But I think the kind of more compelling thing that I have a much harder time shaking off these days is an idea that they don't bring up in this directly, but the idea of panpsychism, right? Like the brain generates consciousness, but there are researchers who say the brain is not a sufficient vehicle for the nature of consciousness and doesn't answer certain questions called the hard problem of consciousness. So how do we have a subjective experience? Why is there a subjective experience of the color red or any of these things? There's no place that that lives physically in the brain. I mean, you can see chemical signals, you can see electrical signals, but there's no thing that stores that subjective experience. So that's something you can chalk up to consciousness. And can that exist somewhere else? Skeptics will say, no, that's just the same way that a train produces steam. Steam is not the point. It's just this off product. Consciousness can be seen as the off product of the brain's functions. And other people say, no, the idea, one way to explain what consciousness is that it is a fundamental field of the universe, like the nuclear force, like gravity, like all these things. I find that really fascinating. Now, maybe that's just because I have sort of chosen a new kind of religious tradition to follow, but I don't know. It seems really cool, like this idea that consciousness is somehow more fundamental than just these processes that are going on in our individual heads. Now, whether that means that, you know, somehow we're all like telepathic or sharing something, I don't know about that. And I certainly don't subscribe to this idea that there are these extraterrestrial agents that have, you know, a blueprint for us and they're feeding us these things at certain times. And that's why you have Alexander Graham Bell and Alicia Gray coming up with the telephone at the same time. I don't necessarily know about that.
These phenomena that we're talking about are the big questions. They're in this show always attributed to an extraterrestrial intelligence that's trying to either send messages to you or created a super consciousness, unconscious mind mm-hmm. thing that we're accessing. But it is aliens. And even
it is the aliens.
Yeah. It's aliens just want us to evolve in a certain way. Duh. But what if it is so much more complex and ancient and just large? It's such a larger concept than any extraterrestrial.
That's what I think. Toby.
Well, what really convinced me about the Akashic Record is when I was reading about it and it said it's rooted in theosophy, which...
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I mean, I find all this stuff pretty interesting. I find it more interesting when it's presented by other people. So in a way that I find a little more compelling and relatable and not waiting for the ET foot to drop. The young stuff is cool. There's a really interesting book called The Intimate Alien, which was
sexy.
Yeah, super sexy. But it was written by a guy who is a religion professor at University of North Carolina, I think. And I'm trying to remember what his name is. I'll put it in the show notes. But I interviewed him for Strange Arrivals. He kind of takes a Jungian view of flying saucers. Listening to a guy who's very smart and very learned talking about his theories of this stuff and relating it back to, you know, Jung and archetypes and stuff like that. I don't know if I totally buy it, but the case is really interesting, right? You can find it fascinating and find it insightful without buying it 100%. So I think these are both like really interesting concepts. And I've also heard in other contexts, there's stuff out there and that it's a matter of, can you access it through meditation or through whatever? When you're talking to people who have studied it, I find that stuff very intriguing. I don't think it's just like pie in the sky stuff. You're attempting to wrestle with these huge unanswered questions that fall in this weird zone between science and philosophy.
Let me say one more thing.
Okay.
Which I think will really put the nail in this coffin once and for all.
Okay.
Which is, there's been a series of stories that come out about this mushroom that occurs all around the world, right? That people eat. And this story just came out a few days ago. And when people eat this mushroom, they see little elf-like people running around. And it happens all over the place. People like cook the mushroom, and then about 15 minutes later, these little elf characters start running around. So you tell me, fellas, why is that mushroom producing little elf figures running around? Other than they're trying to tell us something. Now, maybe that's alien. Maybe it's
the mushrooms, man. They've got something. Mushrooms. They want to tell us about elves.
I have it saved in my phone, so we were talking about this. Yeah, Lin-Mawa Asiatica.
That's the one.
Wait, are you guys going to do stuff they don't want you to know about this?
I think we have to.
I think we do.
About psilocybin and LSD and all these other psychoactive substances that can let you see other things, and especially DMT and the elves and all that. This
machine elves,
This mushroom, it changes the whole game. And I don't know how I went 42 years without ever hearing about it.
I don't think that it was talked about. Like, I never noticed it before. If this is a new phenomenon, then we should definitely ask ourselves, are we hearing it now for the first time because people are just reporting on it now? Or is this some new jam that the mushrooms have all gotten together and they're like, hey, we need to reach them? Interestingly, check out the HBO series Common Side Effects, which is basically all about that.
Oh, are you serious?
Mm-hmm. It's a great cartoon from the people who brought you Scavenger's Reign. And Mike Judge and Greg Daniels, they produce it. Fantastic show. There's a mushroom in it that cures death. One of the things that happens is that they see these little figures running around.
Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
On the list.
Common Side Effects.
Ancient astronaut theorists, it's the same shit as usual. It's these geniuses are kind of littered throughout human history at predetermined times to steer us in certain directions in this sort of predetermined timeline that the ETs have for us. They actually have this kind of interesting thing about iPhones being this technological way to access a kind of Akashic record. You can just use your iPhone as the interface for that, which of course, I can't even remember who it was who says this, but are we soon going to be godlike?
It was Childress.
Was it Childress? Yeah.
So that was a classic alley-oop from Wilcock to Childress.
Yeah. So
you have to wonder, Toby, you have to wonder.
It does. It does.
Matt, you have to wonder.
You have to ask the question. Will we soon be gods? Yes, of course we will. The last thing I want to mention for people who watched this and had the same reaction I did is at one point, David Wilcock, in sort of a fevered sort of stream of consciousness, mentions these four words in this order: mass quantum human evolution.
And help guide us through this mass quantum human evolution.
And I said, this has got to be some kind of bullshit. And it turns out it's not quite as bullshitty as I was expecting. It is an actual speculative interdisciplinary area of study that merges quantum biology, which doesn't feel to me like that would actually be a thing, evolutionary anthropology, and future studies to envision the next stage of human development. Homo quantum is like the next step from Homo sapiens, I guess. it's a real thing that is sort of this futuristic idea that our brains will evolve to the point where instead of doing binary thought, we'll be doing quantum thought, and that will open up all kinds of new things because we'll be able to think so much more powerfully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because of the microtubules in the brain.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
The idea that things are working at this tiny, tiny level, and so it's actually a quantum feature, which is what they're also trying to do with the quantum computer, the idea of having not one or two bits, but many bits.
Many bits. And then they all cancel each other out until you get the right answer.
Be two places at once. Yeah. That's all it is.
Think about how many Amazon boxes they could ship.
Oh, that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
Think of all that stuff.
Yeah.
All the merchandise I can get. I do like to think about all advances as how do I as a consumer benefit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. That was a really fun conversation and a big departure from the usual Ancient Alien stuff. This is phase two.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. Thank you for having me, guys. This is a
thank you for coming
pleasure.
On.
Where can people find you?
You can search Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. You can watch all of the awesome shows that Tenderfoot TV and Grim and Mild produce with iHeart. You can find those anywhere you listen to your favorite shows. Currently, if you live in the United States, apologies to everyone else, you can find our show on Netflix. We put out 2 episodes every week. That's a brand new thing, but it's happening from this moment on.
Yeah, and if you haven't listened to it already, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is like a total affinity show for this show. So if you like this show, you'll love them.
There's an episode of our show on Netflix right now that you can watch that features Toby.
That I'm on. Yes, that's right.
Talking about Rip Current Season 2. It's a great, great chat with Toby.
Toby.
Yeah. Star of stage and screen.
Aw shucksing his way to anonymity.
I'm a double threat.
Matt Frederick, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. We want to have you back.
And, anytime.
We're glad we've solved the mysteries of consciousness today. This has been More Like Ancient Phalians. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time. And go to grabbagcollab.com, become a member, check out our bonus episodes. You can hear us talk with Matt about Jesse Ventura and the future of the American experiment. That's worth it just for that. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe.
Next time on More Like Ancient Phalians. What if Kirsten Dunst's husband thought you were an alien? It's the question on everyone's mind these days. And Oscar-winning director Yorgos Lanthimos and Oscar-winning actress Emma Stone do their best to give us an answer. We'll be talking about the movie Begonia with podcaster Gabby Lombardo. Live long and prosper.
More Like Ancient Phalians is a Grab Bag Collab production. Our editor and producer is Gabby Lombardo, and our music, as always, is by Nathan Reedy.